A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Abroad in Japan podcast, probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host, Chris Broad, and we're joined, as always, by England's top Japan enthusiast, Mr. Pete Donaldson. Pete, how are you doing this week? What's going on?
I'm good. I am not as busy as last week. I'm off to Lithuania on Friday. I've decided that I've been at home for too long. So I'm going to take a couple of days out in Vilnius in Lithuania. Not a place I've been before, but they seem to be a little easier to get into than places like, well, literally anywhere else, to be quite frank. So, I'm going to do that for a couple of days with a mate.
Oh, wow.
Good job.
Yeah, you are the first person I think I've ever met who's gone to Lithuania. We must have some Lithuanian listeners, because a lot of our listeners are from exotic lands like Poland and France. And Germany.
That's all you've got. That's the most
exotic lands.
Exotic you've got, yeah. Just very exotic lands.
But that'd be fun. And I'm also jealous because I still haven't left Japan and you're already going off on your second holiday of the month, having just come back from the Canary Islands. You lucky devil.
You just don't want to fill in the forms that you have to fill in to get out of Japan.
It's a lot of effort. I mean, you know what I'm like. If it requires filling in a form, it ain't going to happen. But I did just get back from Kyoto, so maybe that kind of counts as a holiday, being in old Kyoto. I did a slightly drunken live show this week. I've been doing a lot of live shows recently. Another drunken one. I don't know if you saw it. It was on the second channel. Basically, I got it was a sponsored live show. It was a brand in Kyoto, a gin brand called Kinobi. And I know the owner, David, he's a good friend. And it's their 5th year anniversary. They've won all the gin awards. They're like the top gin in Japan. They've won like the craft gin award of the year around the world. They do so well. And I went down there because I love the brand, drink it a lot. And I thought I'd do a live show and interview him and the bartender, have 5 or 6 cocktails. But because the first live show was a technical fucking disaster, we had to 10 minutes in, we had to stop the show and restart it, meaning I had about 8 cocktails filled with 45% content gin, alcoholic content.
And you're all leathered.
And, well, you can watch me, like, about an hour in to the sort of hour and a half live show, I just start to slur my words. I'm a little bit rude. It gets quite uncomfortable.
In there.
Poor old David. He's got poor old David, who's this, you know, he's a British guy as well. This is another reason I love the gin. It's run by a Brit. So I feel kind of patriotic about that, the best gin brand in Japan is half British. But you can see him sort of looking like, oh God, this is getting out of hand, because I'm just being really terrible and awful and unprofessional. But when all is said and done, it went quite well. And I struggled to watch back the show. I had lots of comments from people sort of saying it was fun watching me get drunk. So there you go. Don't do a live show while drinking 8 to 9 cocktails. That should be a given, really.
that's live show 101, presumably. You can combat your technical snafus. You can deal with that sort of thing, roll with punches there. But drinking a half a bottle of gin, it's not great any day, I would say. It's quite stressful.
No, A valuable lesson learned, a valuable lesson. And also I released the first Abroad in Japan video in a while, sitting in this very chair where I am now. In the video, I ate and drank 21 of my favourite things from Japanese convenience stores. Although Family Mart fried chicken was conspicuously absent because I think I've done enough fried food for the year. But I've got loads of comments on the video of people being like, Chris, don't make these kind of videos for your health. Don't do it. I want to see you live. Yeah. Don't worry. I don't eat this much crap every week.
No.
On any given day. You know, it's a special occasion. It was the first video in the studio.
What was your favourite bit of ket, as the Northeasterns sometimes call it, in the studio?
It was probably this. This is cream colon.
Showing off. Oh, cream colon. Cream colon. A bit of a classic, really, isn't it? Bit of a classic.
It is,
cheeky Japanese bit of Japanglish, isn't it?
Have you ever had it before, cream colon?
I've not. It's just one of those things that I just know it's not going to be nice. And there's way more weird stuff to impress people with, I think. So even bringing back your creamed colon, which sounds absolutely horrific. There's other silly things to show people. I think it's fair to say.
Well, it's like a little tube of biscuit filled with cream, and it looks like someone's done just chopped up a colon. I realise colon has 1L, but cream colon. It was good. But that was the first video to inaugurate the brand new Abroad in Japan studio, which is dangerously close to being finished now. Dangerously close, still not done. Very exciting times.
When's the set guy coming in and then to put your set together?
Yeah, so the set is being built in a room in, I think, Saitama or Chiba. I'm not entirely sure. And then they're sort of building it all. It's like this whole street, and they're building it down there, and then they're going to sort of ship it up in a truck or two, and hopefully in the space of one day, get it in the studio and assemble it all. I don't know how they're going to do it, but it's going to be fun. Yeah. Have we talked about the plans for this set on the live show? On the podcast.
I think on the podcast, you've definitely discussed that you're going to be doing like a little sort of Blade Runner-y kind of style ramen shop, et cetera, et cetera.
I mean, explaining it sounds a little bit cheap maybe, but the real thing is going to be mind-blowing. Mm. But we'll save that for when it's done. We've got a story this week from a person who has no name. There is no name. Why is there no name?
There is no name. My name is Jessica.
We have left out your name. It's Jessica, is it? All right, good.
It's Jessica.
Where'd you see that? Where'd you see Jessica?
In the first paragraph, Mr. Don't Read Anything.
I should have read the story first. Hi, Chris and Pete. Did that sound weird? Oh, she said, sorry. She says, hi, Pete and Chris. Did that sound weird?
Oh,
yeah, it sounds so weird, Jessica. I turned it around subconsciously. Hi, Pete and Chris. I hope you two are doing well. I'm a longtime follower of the podcast and YouTube channel. My name is Jessica and I'm writing from Tennessee in the USA. I would like to tell you about the time I was lost in Japan. I studied abroad in Japan in the summer of 2018 and I went to an international school in Shibuya. And my host family lived in Saitama, just outside of Tokyo. The program also placed me with another student who was from Italy. It took my host sister and me an hour every day to get to our school, and our host parents told us to always stay together, but she would just leave me all the time. She had a friend that came with her that she clung to. Bitch. My third night in Japan, with no surprise, she left me once again. The school and my host family did not give me good instructions on how to get to and from school. I got off to what I thought was my bus stop. I didn't know where I was. Luckily, I downloaded an offline map ahead of time, and this was the perfect time to use it. Unfortunately, it told me to go down a dark alleyway. Uh-oh. Oh God, it sounds like the start of a horror film. I don't care how safe Japan is. I am not going down the dark alleyway, especially not in the middle of the night. So I went another way. The map would not reroute. It was useless. At this point, tears started to roll down my eyes. I was scared. I knocked on a door and tried to ask for help. That didn't work. Next, I saw a father and daughter walking into another house. I flagged them down for help. I showed them my address, but they did not know where my house was. I burst into a hysterical cry. I'm going to have to fall asleep here in the streets, I told myself. Finally, I saw a man outside smoking a cigarette. His English was limited, but he understood my situation. Was it Natsuki? Was it Natsuki? He went inside to get something. The next thing I knew, I was surrounded by the police. When he came out, he was just as confused as I was. Someone called the police on me, apparently. Oh, God.
Yeah.
Either way, they were trying to help or they were afraid of me. The man explained to the police my situation. One cop got on a motorcycle and drove away. The whole time, a female cop was hugging me, trying to calm me down. A few moments later, my host father appeared. As we walked home together, he asked, "Where's your sister?" I replied, "She left me." He held up a fist and punched the air. Turns out my house was just around the corner, 120 seconds away. After that, I tried not to talk to my host sister. I was angry, but I noticed that she was just shy. We then became best friends. I actually went to visit her in Italy this summer. I hadn't seen her since Japan 3 years ago. Aw, a happy ending there to a story of chaos and despair, crying, asking half of Japan where the house is. But at least you got home. Crikey.
Where is
what do you
your
make of
sister?
That?
That's terrible, isn't it? Like, but can you get away with sort of saying that shyness when a lass has just left you absolutely in the lurch? Terrible stuff, isn't it? Awful.
So the host sister was Italian. Oh, I got that right, yeah?
No, I believe that... no, that can't be right, can it? I mean, no, I think the host sister was Japanese, an international school in Shibuya. Oh, no, wait, sorry, yeah. The programme also placed me with another student who was indeed from Italy. So the sister was from Italy. Yeah, damn it. Oh, I was hoisted
you
by my own petard
the test.
There. My own Italian petard. Unbelievable. But yeah, not ideal. Just wandering the streets as a young lass. But yeah. But it turns out they mended those bridges and now Jessica goes to visit the Italian sister.
It's a Netflix documentary in the making with a strong narrative arc filled with despair, horror, friendship, hatred. Be a good little short film, that.
And the rest.
Speaking of hatred, this week's news story is a fun one. I say fun, it's a disaster. A host club in Japan has sparked outrage on social media for dressing its guys up like the Nazis, a Nazi-themed host club, which is a bold move. I don't know what they were thinking. A newly opened Nazi-themed host club in the Japanese city of Osaka sparked outrage, leading it to shut down and issue an apology for the lack of awareness amongst the staff on Tuesday, multiple news outlets reported. Dubbed unfair, the host club, a type of cabaret nightclub where attractive men serve drinks, sing and engage in conversations with the customers, had advertised itself on several host sites with the club's hosts dressed in full Nazi cosplay. Where the hell do you get Nazi cosplay in the first place? I've never seen that at Don Quixote, thank God.
You have to make it yourself, surely.
Oh, God. I mean, this is a host club, right? I think most people, when we think of these sort of clubs in Japan, we have hostess clubs, right? As you find in your beloved Yakuza video game series, right? I think you can do that as a mini game, right?
I believe so, yeah, in one of them.
You haven't done it, have you?
I can't remember doing it. There's certainly there's hostess clubs. I remember you run one of them in, I think, Yakuza 0. Quite a fun little sub-game, really. But yeah, host clubs, very much like handsome men in sort of 70s suits, hanging out, touting for business outside their clubs, bringing women in for a little chat.
And lots of money. It's basically taken
lots
out of them.
Lots of money.
I know Connor did a video at one of them where he was a host, and you basically just have to speak to women, flirt with them, get them to buy you more drinks and whatnot. Mm. Presumably in this one, well dressed as Joseph Goebbels. And it's not gone down very well, unsurprisingly. This is disgusting, tweeted UK anti-Semitism watchdog NGO Campaign Against Anti-Semitism. It's been a bad year for this sort of thing. Earlier on in the year, we had the director of the opening ceremony of the Tokyo Olympics, who was criticised for having made anti-Semitic jokes in the past. And also we had a promotional video for the Olympics involving footage from Nazi propaganda in the 1936 Olympics. So it's been a bad year. For Nazi
stuff in Japan. It's been a bad year
for
Nazis. Bad year for the Japanese, yeah. Just the idea of... when I was in... I think probably was Shibuya or Shinjuku some Halloween about 5 years ago, 4 years ago, I saw a bloke dressed in full Nazi regalia on the tube platform. And it's not something that seems to be ever present in Japanese, and certainly Japanese youth's minds, simply because... I guess they probably don't talk about it as much. And, you know, the World War, although it obviously visited the Japanese islands with horrific consequences, perhaps the taint, the kind of history of that isn't really discussed in schools as much, because obviously the Japanese were a part of being what you would call the aggressors in the situation, and obviously Japan sort of regenerated massively after the war, and there's very little still around.
And became allies, of course,
pre-45, and it obviously became allies. So it's probably not discussed as much as it is in Europe. Certainly not in Britain. I mean, Jesus Christ, the amount of
cachet, we glorify, don't we?
Political cachet we our leaders, frequently cowardly themselves, leaders take from stuff like the D-Day landings and Dunkirk and stuff like that are frequently astonishing, to be quite frank.
It's such an interesting contrast coming from the UK to Japan. In the UK, morning, day, night, you will hear about World War II, right? You'll hear it, see it. It's very much sort of not glorified, but obviously because it was a very big thing in the UK that we won and we came through it. Whereas in Japan, obviously as they lost, there was a lot of guilt and sort of shame associated with it. And the truth is, I don't think I've ever really spoken to many Japanese people here about World War II. They don't really talk about it much. You don't have reruns of World War II documentaries on TV day and night like we
There's
do
no
in the UK.
There's no law in Japanese.
No, it's just not really covered here. So they probably, if I were to take 10 Japanese people and ask them about the Holocaust, I think you would find there would be scarcely any information. They wouldn't have much knowledge on the Holocaust and the horrors of what happened in Europe, you know. So that is a bit of a problem. But I guess there's a lot of sort of shame and guilt associated with it. The only bit of World War II that you do hear about a lot here is, of course, the sort of atomic bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, which you hear about a fair bit. But you just don't hear about World War II much in Japan, hence the ignorance, and the Nazis seem to be not as vilified in Japan as they are in sort of Western media, right? That's what I found over the years anyway.
Yeah, so. And there's a certain kind of, I mean, everything is open for cosplay in Japan, I think it's fair to say, and, but this is where it kind of, a line needs to be drawn somewhere, I would say. And look, you can say if it's good enough for David Bowie, he enjoyed buying and keeping Nazi memorabilia and stuff like that. It still shouldn't be taking place in modern society in 2021.
The only good thing about Japan and World War II afterwards is the country has remained staunchly pacifist. They're a very sort of peaceful nation now. And they're very much against war. So as a whole, that's one good thing to come from it. But yeah, don't be surprised if you come to Japan. People here, they just don't really talk about World War II much. It's just not as big a thing. So don't be surprised by that. You know, people often ask me, what do Japanese people think of World War II? Nothing from what I've gathered over the years. But you never know. We should sit down, Ryotaro and Natsuki, and grill them on it.
Chat about the war.
I remember,
what did you do in the war, Daddy?
What did you do?
Alive.
I remember I was in a hostess club with Natsuki once, and they were playing Pearl Harbor, and I went, look at that, Natsuki, it's terrible, buy me a beer, and he bought me a beer. So
sorry for Pearl Harbor.
I was like, look at that,
big licks, isn't it?
It was the moment where like a plane like blows up one of the battleships and Cuba Gooding Jr. is like running down the boat, and I was like, look at that, can you believe that, Natsuki? Such violence, buy me a beer. And he did, and feel a bit bad for that. Exploiting Pearl Harbor for a free drink.
Show me the money.
From Natsuki. We'll be back in a minute with the fax machine, your questions and stories this week.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we'll weigh around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? Mine's pretty low after coming back from the craziness of WrestleMania, too many body slams and all that. And I'm pretty jealous of my co-host Chris, who seems to have been exploring Japan's most isolated hotel. He's definitely winning in the relaxation race, but I'm determined to catch up with him. It can be easy to get swept up in social gatherings and spread ourselves too thin, but with therapy, you can learn to prioritize your time and recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Japan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Japan.
Hello, I'm Hazel Hayes.
And I'm Shane Todd.
And welcome to our brand new podcast, We're Not Fucking Historians. It sounds like I'm saying we're not fucking historians.
Yeah, we're saying we're not experts.
We're not historians ourselves. Not that we're not having sex with historians.
No historians getting fucked on this pod.
Zero historians getting fucked on this podcast. We are, in fact, your alternative guide to Irish history.
Every week, we prize open the history books and find a new tale from the Emerald Isle's colourful past. We're exploring Ireland's traditions, its rich heritage, and its long, proud history of being invaded by literally anyone with a boat. The Vikings were showing up at the monastery going, where's that booty?
The earliest booty call.
It's the booty call you didn't want. 50 Scandinavian Vikings showed up.
Or our biggest celeb, St. Paddy. He says he prayed up to 100 times a day and sometimes during the night.
That's what a 5-year-old would say. I prayed 100 times, I swear. Patrick also said he was fastest in his slippers. He's a fucking Billy Bullshitter.
If, like us, you're the kind of person who's interested in history, but not so interested that you'd go read a book about it or listen to actual experts, then this is the show for you.
This is History Done Differently, with a couple of facts and plenty of crack.
So join us on our journey through Ireland's past.
Search We're Not Fucking Historians on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And remember,
we're not fucking historians. Sorry, I was far too fast there.
We're Not Fucking Historians is a Stack production
and part of the Acast Creator Network.
And we're back with the fax machine. What do we got this week from our listeners, Mr. Donaldson?
We got a message from Audrey, the expat in London. I recently moved to England from Canada, and one of the things I've noticed is that the English generally communicate in a much more indirect way than what I was used to working in Canada and the US. I've been reading up on English communication styles and culture, and several times authors have noted parallels between English and Japanese cultures, mainly indirectness, modesty, and a high amount of self-depreciation. My question is, do you agree? Do you think people coming from the UK have an easier time adjusting to Japanese communication styles and culture than, say, Americans, Canadians, or Australians? Cheers, Audrey the expat in London. Chris, I'm very much of the opinion that it is easier for British people to transition than the Americans, because the Americans, in particular, are very open to saying how they feel, and the British are repressed as hell.
I'd say that's fairly accurate, yeah. We don't really talk about our feelings much, actually.
No.
Whereas in America, you know, it's fair game. I've noticed when I receive emails from different from viewers from different countries who just want to send me a message or something, they're a very different structure. For example, from American viewers and listeners, the message, there's like the top paragraph will always be sort of introducing who they are, what they do, and talking a bit about themselves, right? Just sort of say, hi, my name's Barry, I'm from Alabama, and I do X, Y, Z. Mm. And then they'll sort of lead into it. Whereas in the UK, when I get messages from British viewers or listeners, they don't have that paragraph at all. They don't want to talk about who they are or what they do in the same way. So I don't know. I do find that, though. I do find British people, we are a bit more, I don't know, I think we keep our opinions to ourselves a bit more, generally, and sort of hold back a bit more. Certainly in displays of emotion, we're very kind of monotonous and stoic and boring and horrible as a people. I don't know. I think I'd say that's accurate. I'd say that's an accurate generalization. Any thoughts on that, Pete? What do you reckon?
No, I completely agree. I think we're very roundabout people. We're terribly worried that we're going to upset people. But then we end up upsetting people anyway by being a little bit indirect and a bit useless. So, yeah, we're very... very repressed. Very, very repressed indeed.
you'll be fine, Audrey. If you come to Japan, you'll be fine.
Yeah, absolutely fine.
Greetings from Finland, Radio God Pete Donaldson and Chris. I'm, that's a difficult name. I'm Jussi.
Jussi Vitanen.
Jussi Vitanen. Jussi Vitanen. And I'm an aspiring confectioner. Oh. And my dream is to open up a confectionery business one day. Jussi Vitanen Confectionery. What are you guys, what's your favourite sweets or snacks? And do you know of any confectionaries in Japan? I must know to feed my insatiable sweet tooth. Jussi from Finland. Well, Jussi, check out the video that I posted just a day ago. It's the perfect one, actually. 21 things. Many of them are sweets. One of them that I had in the video was this Gabba for sleep. Have you ever seen this, Pete? Gabba for sleep.
Oh no, what's that? It looks a little medical. It's like a medical chocolate.
It's weird, right? Like a lot of confectionery in Japan, they play up the medicinal qualities of it. And Gabba for sleep is just chocolate, and it's got gamma amino butyric acid in, which slows down the neurons in your brain apparently and makes you sleepy. So it's like Rehypnol,
but in chocolate form. Sleepy chocolates.
So
very nice.
Next time I go on a plane and I need to sleep, I'll take a whole packet of Gabba for sleep. Gabba for sleep. Also,
fantastic stuff.
What was the other one? I had these like cola bottles that were called Cola Up the Hard, and they're like the hardest cola bottles known to man. Cola Up the Hard. Where are they?
So is it like kind of... is it like cola, you know, like our soft cola bottles that you get in, I suppose you'd sort of say those kind of jelly sweets sort of thing. And is it like kind of like, is it hard like a cola cube or
it's
is it
so
like a
hard.
Boiled sweet?
It's like a jelly sweet, but it's like the hardest jelly known to man.
Oh,
and they love talking about how hard it is. Like on the front, it's like, if you don't like hard gummies, put these back on the shelf. Don't touch them. It's like very aggressive marketing. And
oh, brilliant.
you can see on the back there's a scale from 1 to 5, but this is a 5+. It's literally off the scale of hardness. Mm. That's how hard Cola Up the Hard is.
Do they have? I mean, they've invented that scale, and Cola the Hard is up at 5 rather than down at 1. Do they produce any other products that are the Cola the Soft, Cola the Medium, Cola the Viscous?
Cola the Viscous. Mm. No, it starts and ends at Cola Up the Hard. They do have just the Cola Up gummies, but they lack the aggressive marketing of Cola Up the Hard.
I like hard gummies though. I keep my gummies in the fridge. It's just nice, kind of nice, chewy, kind of ooh, lovely.
The thing is though, these taste like cola bottles mixed with kind of shoe polish. They've got a very sort of bitter, chewy taste to them.
Chewy.
That's just not
very
good.
Chewy.
Yeah. I eat shoes regularly. I know what shoes taste like. And also Galbo chocolate. These are chocolate biscuits covered in indestructible chocolate that does not melt in your fingers or in your hands.
That looks disgusting.
Very clever.
It looks like white chocolate. It looks foul. It looks like sick.
It's good. It's good. White chocolate's gross. Good, Pete. But they freeze dry it so it doesn't melt. And as I said in the video, when it's like, I used to work in a staff room when I was a teacher, right? And they had a rule where it had to get to like 38 degrees Celsius before they put the air conditioning unit on because they were trying to save energy, which made no sense because I probably spent half the week just feeling dead during summer. But you couldn't eat chocolate in the staff room because it would just melt all over the desk. So I had to get Galbo. I simply had to because it didn't melt. It was the only thing I could eat.
Sweating. Just sweating before you can have a bit of aircon. Unbelievable.
Absolutely. If I'd taken Gabba for sleeping, there would have been a sticky mess all over the table. Dreadful.
Got a message, got an email from Kabir from India. Congratulations to Chris for finally getting Twitter verified. Yes, Chris CC'd me in on a tweet about him boasting about being Twitter verified. And I think I've had a message every hour about that in that reply all. It's really knocked my algorithm all over the gaff.
You deserve it.
Yeah.
You deserve it.
So Kabir's question is, why is Japan so popular for anime and not so much for movies and series? And how is the anime culture inside Japan? Thanks, Chris and Pete. Good luck. I don't know what that means. Good luck generally in life. Good luck with the podcast. Good luck with the studio. Or just good luck with this answer that you're about to dispatch, Chris. Why is it so popular?
Good luck with my Twitter verified status. It is good. It's just so good seeing that tick. It's so good. I didn't know, but you presumably know, is when you get verified, you get a whole new notification section on Twitter. So you get like notifications general, you've got mentions if someone mentions you, and now there's a verified tab as well where I can see special elite individuals who've somehow got a verified tick. It shows me only their responses, of which you're one, and you've appeared in there a few times. But that's basically it. There's no other benefit. I don't know, really. That's a tough one. I think I was speaking to an actor about this recently, a famous Japanese actor. You know, who's going to be in a video soon about this. And I think we said that, you know, that the budgets just aren't there anymore for movies in Japan. Like they were back in the 60s, 70s, 80s. Film companies don't like to take risks in Japan as much.
Yeah.
Because the market's very different now. And
that's true everywhere, isn't it, I suppose?
It is, but like, obviously Japan has a smaller domestic market. When you make a film in English, you can... you've got so many more markets you can put it in, whereas Japan is just Japan because people don't like subtitles. And a lot of the biggest movies and adverts you see for films these days in Japan are like aimed at younger people, and they are not very good, to put it bluntly. There's been some big anime movies though, isn't there? Like Yu no Nawa, that was massive a few years ago. There was the follow-up to that, of which I can't remember the title for now. If you're talking about anime, you've picked the wrong guy. You want Joey the Anime Man or Trash Taste or anyone that's not me. Anime culture inside Japan, how's it viewed? It's a good question, actually.
You don't really see a lot of people enjoying it. Maybe the mobile phone technology is just a little bit different and they sort of favour smaller devices. But I never see people watching it with headphones on the tube. Maybe that I see people read manga quite a lot, but I just never see people watching it on the tube or anything. Which is obviously I'm not in Japanese people's home, so I can't possibly check. But
breaking decent research.
Anybody watching anime?
I think you'll find that obviously anime is more popular here than it is back in the UK or the US, but it's probably not as popular as you think. It's probably not as watched as widely as you think. Manga. That was a really good point there. You do see a lot more people on the train holding manga books and whatnot, manga comics, than you do watching stuff. But yeah, that's pretty much the limits of my knowledge of anime. It's pretty shocking, really. Mm. I do like anime. I do like, you know, some of the films are good. What's good? Garden of Words, The Girl Who Leapt Through Time, Akira. Those are the three films that I know. You don't really watch anime, do you, Pete?
No, I find it quite difficult to find time to watch anything these days. We sat down, me and my partner sat down.
Even Broad Japan?
Even Broad Japan. Well, I haven't watched your last Robin snack video.
Oh my God.
Let's just eat a lot of ket for an hour.
Filler content, Pete. Filler content.
Yeah, exactly. No, so I've not had time to do that really. I'm finding it increasingly difficult to sort of find the time to do anything. I'm not any more busy. I've not got any more jobs or any fewer jobs. I'm just kind of like, I just don't have time to do. I played one round of PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, PUBG, last week, and that was 20 minutes, and that was kind of like notable. Notable by its presence. I was like, not played a video game in a long time. I'll play a quick round of that. Killed a couple of people, then drowned in a boat.
Well, what do you spend all your time on? Why are you so busy?
I know. I don't know. I'm just working or walking the dogs I don't know. My free time is just chomped up by just doing bits and bobs, odds and sods.
Spending it all in Lithuania, from what I can gather.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Well, I look forward to hearing about your Lithuanian trip in. It'll be the episode after the next one. But keep the stories, questions, comments coming in to abroadinjapanpodcast@gmail.com. We'll be back later in the week, guys, to fill you in on what's going on over here in Japan. But for now, no matter where you might be, out there in the big wide world, have yourself a great week and we'll see you then. Have yourselves a good one. Bye for now.
Abroad in Japan is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously,
man. Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we're way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more. And join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.